couldn't do without. Sugar Hill, way up in Harlem. If you miss the A train, you'll find you've missed the quickest way to Harlem. Hurry, get on, now it's coming. Listen to those rails a-thrumming. On board, get on the A train. Soon you will be on Sugar Hill in Harlem. To go to Sugar Hill, way up in Harlem. You must take the A train to go to Sugar Hill way up in Harlem. If you miss the A train, you've missed the quickest way to Harlem.
Sugar Hill in Harlem.
Test 1, 2, 3, please. We hear you loud and clear, Chef. Thank you. We'll get started shortly.
Stay awake to break the habit, singing.
Holy, holy, church bells softly chime. It ain't melody so singing. It's a long road to Canaan on Bleecker Street.
Once in your life, you find her, someone who turns your heart around, and next thing you know, you're closing down the town. Wake up and it's still with you, even though you left your way across town, wondering to yourself, hey, what am I about? Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. We see extraordinary progress with our recovery here in this city, and we know why. Vaccination. Vaccination has made all the difference. Largest vaccination effort by far in the city's history, well over 11 million doses, climbing all the time. Here are some facts. A lot of people don't know, but you need to. 60% of all the residents of New York City are fully vaccinated now. 60% fully vaccinated amongst adults. 80% have had at least one dose. And again, we see consistently folks who get the first dose come back overwhelmingly. Almost everyone comes back and gets that second dose. So 80% of adults in New York City now have had at least one dose. So we know now the question is, where do we go from here? We are going to keep building our vaccination effort constantly. We're going to keep reaching new people every day. But there's also the crucial question of boosters. Already, for folks who are significantly immunocompromised, boosters are available.
There's no.
But we are clear about the fact that the federal government is considering authorizing boosters on a larger scale, and we need to be ready to move on that immediately. The initial report was that it could be authorized for as soon as this coming Monday, September 20th. We have not gotten a clear formal indication from the federal government yet, but we're preparing on the assumption it could be as soon as next week, because we have to. And we're going to go over today how we approach that, because it's going to be a really important moment to get additional protection to as many New Yorkers as possible. So again, we don't know the exact date, but we're going to be ready either way. So today we detail the NYC booster shot plan. And the foundation of the plan is the extraordinary number of decentralized vaccination sites we have all over the city, over 1,900 vaccination sites, unbelievable reach all over the five boroughs, and 25 city-sponsored sites that have been particularly high impact. We're keeping those open to prepare for a surge of demand when the booster shots are authorized for a larger population. So we are going to prepare not only to have those fixed sites, but to have a variety of special outreach events to reach people who need those boosters. There'll be weekend booster shot events. We believe we can reach tens of thousands of people with outreach of all kinds. Obviously, walk-in will be available in lots and lots of places. What we're going to be doing the second we get the information, emails, texts sent out proactively to folks who are eligible, letting people know as soon as the detailed guidance comes exactly what it says. We need to be ready to move immediately, and we have proven we can do vaccination on a vast scale here in this city. Credit to all the vaccinators, credit to the test and trace team, everyone who's been a part of it, our healthcare leadership. We're ready to do this again with boosters to give you an update based on what we know at this moment. And we are anxiously awaiting further detailed information from the federal government. But to give you the update based on what we know now, our health commissioner, Dr. Dave Choksi.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mayor. The COVID-19 vaccines have already saved lives and prevented so much suffering. Booster doses are likely to help extend that protection, at least for some people, based on our current scientific understanding. So let me try to break down what will happen in the next few weeks. Of the three authorized vaccines, currently Pfizer is being vetted by the FDA, which means it is likely to be the earliest to be approved for a booster. We still await further data related to Moderna and J&J, but expect it to be forthcoming soon. As always, vaccines will be evaluated to ensure both safety and effectiveness. The next steps are for independent scientific committees of the FDA and the CDC to review the evidence and offer recommendations. The FDA committee is slated to meet tomorrow, and the CDC committee is slated to meet on September 22nd and 23rd, that's next week. Depending on their review, a booster for certain New Yorkers who received the Pfizer vaccine could get the green light as soon as next week. There is some scientific debate about precisely whom would benefit from a booster dose, whether older adults or a broader population. That's why it is important to let the expert process play out as I have described. but it is highly likely that boosters will be authorized for some New Yorkers by next week, and New York City will be ready, as the mayor has described. One thing we should note, you should expect there to be some minimum interval of several months between your last dose and your booster. Not everyone will be eligible immediately. And remember that additional doses of both the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are already authorized for people who are significantly immunocompromised, such as patients with cancer undergoing chemotherapy, some patients who received an organ transplant, and people with advanced HIV. You can find a full list of those conditions at nyc.gov/COVID vaccine. Finally, I echo the mayor's thanks to the people who helped us get to over 5.1 million New Yorkers fully vaccinated, namely the volunteers, city workers, and everyday people who won hearts and minds over the proverbial dinner table. Back to you, Mr. Mayor.
The proverbial dinner table. I like that, Dave. Very, very colorful. But yeah, that is exactly right. It is everyday New Yorkers who did this, who convinced their loved ones, their family, their friends, their neighbors, but also everyday New Yorkers who came forward to get vaccinated. That is the reason the city is coming back. And it's astounding how many people made that choice. We're almost up to 5.7 million New Yorkers who have received at least one dose. And that's an amazing act of solidarity, of communal commitment. So many people coming forward. So we're going to keep going every single day, more and more with vaccination, and we're going to work with every part of our community. And one thing that's really exciting is to see the positive impact that vaccination is having on the comeback of the city. And part of the city we love so much, we love particularly, it means so much to New Yorkers, is our restaurant community and hundreds of thousands of people work in our restaurant community. Restaurants have been stepping up and participating actively in our vaccination efforts. They're referring customers to vaccination sites. They're checking vaccination cards, key to NYC. Great cooperation we're getting out there. Restaurateurs understand that they can help everyone to move forward together. Today is an important day. It's Restaurant Vaccination Day of Action. So today is a day where the restaurant community is working with the city to maximize vaccination. We're going to have mobile units outside restaurants around the city that are participating. And we'll put up on the screen the different locations, because it's great to see so many restaurants that are part of this effort that believe in involving their customers and reaching their customers and letting them know they can get vaccinated right now. I want you to hear about this effort. And I want you to hear from someone who is part of an amazing, amazing New York City institution. It's one of my personal favorites, the Oyster Bar, and restaurant at Grand Central Terminal. I'm going to hold up this menu because it's an amazing menu. I have spent many a day at the Oyster Bar, and you can get essentially everything. If it comes from the sea, you can get it at the Oyster Bar, but you also get a big dose of history. The Oyster Bar has been there for over 100 years, as long as Grand Central Station's been there. The Oyster Bar has been there. It's a beautiful location. I often, when I have guests coming in from out of town, including some of my relatives who came from Italy, I brought them to the Oyster Bar as one of the authentic New York City places to experience great food, great atmosphere, great history. And now the Oyster Bar is helping us get more and more New Yorkers vaccinated. I want you to hear from the executive chef and one of the partners in this amazing institution. He is also known affectionately as the Bishop of Bivalves. My great pleasure to introduce Sandy Ingber.
Hi, how are you?
How you doing, Sandy?
Hi, I'm really great. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor de Blasio, for having me join me today for your leadership on Key to New York City. The key to New York City keeps New Yorkers healthy and safe, businesses open, and employees on the job. The Oyster Bar opened in 1913 and is the oldest restaurant in Grand Central Terminal. We were actually built in the same year, 108 years. We are thrilled to be reopening at 100% capacity next Monday, September 20th. The vaccine is our lifeline out of the pandemic and the best way to prevent further shutdowns. So we will both be checking the vaccine cards and IDs to make sure that we follow the rules. Our business depends heavily on both tourists, commuters, and business people. We look forward to having everybody come back to the office so they can come by for a great meal. Thank you again, Mayor de Blasio, for your leadership on this, and we are proud to help keep New Yorkers safe.
Thank you so much, Sandy. I'm really glad you guys are coming back strong. Again, one of the great, great New York places. And thank you for your commitment to keeping the customers safe, and thank you for bringing great food to New Yorkers for over 100 years. We'll see you soon at the Oyster Bar.
Great, thank you.
Now, everybody, we continue to work to keep New Yorkers safe. It's working. The vaccination effort is having a huge impact. But as I've said, our recovery depends on all forms of safety. We're working on all fronts to keep New York City healthy and safe. That obviously includes public safety in every way. And public safety will be a foundation of our recovery. And our recovery will also help us to move along our progress on public safety. Yesterday, we announced something really important, an anti-violence jobs program. We're already seeing really promising impact from that. Today, we're going to do something else that's really going to help. And it's all about reaching our young people and reaching them in every way, helping encourage and support the kids who are on the right path. That's the overwhelming majority of kids. And then there are some kids who are teetering on the brink. There are some kids who are really affected by some of the negative impulses or realities around them. We've got to help those kids. So we're going to do that in a lot of ways. Today we're announcing something amazing. It is something that will reach kids in public housing all over the city. A positive opportunity and one that shows how much we care about our young people and respect them, and something that will be exciting for them. The NYCHA Youth Basketball League launches in partnership with the New York Knicks and Madison Square Garden. I want to thank the Knicks, thank Madison Square Garden for really showing commitment to our young people, particularly young people in public housing who need it. There will be over 144 teams from across the city. 3,000 players will be involved. We're going to do something special here, and it's going to be felt by thousands and thousands more. It's going to be something that's really exciting for people in the community, and we're focusing on where the need is greatest, where we've seen too much violence, and we have to create positive options and positive forward motion. There's going to be not only the games, there's going to be skills and drills, clinics for younger kids with the Knicks, and it's going to be particularly powerful because a lot of the games will be played on the courts that have been refurbished and made beautiful at public housing by the NYPD. Another great example, NYPD bonding and connecting with communities, connecting with young people. This is going to be very, very special. Our young people are going to be moved by the things that engage them, and the positive options. Seeing adults, including our police officers, out there supporting them, cheering them on, encouraging them. Athletes coming out to help them. All of these positive things move our young people. And we also know if we reach them with arts and culture, we reach them with sports, it helps them to engage everything else, academics and their future in so many ways. Now, our young people, we know this is a basketball city. Young people love basketball, but they may not know the history as well as they might. So I want to give a little history lesson, a little story going back long, long ago in the misty ages long ago, 1993. Knicks versus the Bulls. Picture a pivotal moment in a game. Picture a decisive game, under a minute left. The Knicks need one more basket to win. And who comes forward? A great New York hero. John Starks dribbles up the court, fakes out his defender, dives into the key, rises up, and slams down what is now legendarily known as the dunk. And who did he dunk right over? Michael Jordan and Horace Grant. As you see on your screens right now, a legendary New York City basketball moment and one for the ages. And I'm telling you this because it's history worth celebrating. And I'm telling you this because we're about to be joined by someone. There are a lot of people who are loved by New Yorkers. This is one of the guys who is most loved because of his grit, his determination, his energy, his passion. He exemplifies everything good about the city, and he cares about the city and the young people. And that's why he is getting involved in helping our young kids in public housing with this amazing new basketball league. What an honor to present to you, ladies and gentlemen, John Starks.
Thank you, Mayor. You make me want to run back out on the court.
Well, they need you, John. They could use you right now.
We're getting there. We're getting there. I just want to thank everyone for letting me be a part of this. We know how important it is for everyone to have access to safe places to play. I want to thank NYCHA. I want to thank the NYPD. I want to thank the House of Mandela for their efforts and commitment to creating this project and working to refurbish all these basketball courts. A special thanks goes to Mayor de Blasio for help funding this program and your role in providing these safe places for our youth of New York. These refurbishments alongside the Junior Knicks basketball programming at these courts is a show of how sports can come together to bring, how communities can come together
John, you're doing fine.
Okay, my apologies. To help bring communities together. And the Knicks organization is proud to be a part of this program. Knicks Esports are committed to be a part of these communities now and into the future. And the most important thing is we know kids that are participating are going to have lots of fun. We just want to thank everybody who created this program, obviously NYPD, NYCHA, and everyone, how important it is to give back to the community. And so I'm excited to be a part of it and excited to watch these kids continue to grow.
Hey, John, thank you. And I got to tell you, I want to just thank you because I know you care so much. I was with you up in the Northeast Bronx with the Edenwald YMCA opening just a couple of weeks ago. And you took the time to be there. And you're taking the time to be a part of this initiative with NYCHA. People have been through a lot the last year and a half, and seeing our heroes out there with us makes a big, big difference and gives people hope. So I want to really thank you for your personal commitment, particularly to the young people in New York City.
Thank you.
Now, I would editorialize that a lot of us would like to see John back on the court right now to help the Knicks. I'd like to turn to a Knicks fan, a long-suffering but still hopeful Knicks fan who hails from the Bronx and represents the 36th State Senate District in the Bronx, one of the great rising stars in public service in this city. And even though he's been a Knicks fan, he has maintained his hope and his determination. State Senator Jamal Bailey.
Mr. Mayor, thank you very much. And, you know, I imagine it like the Golden Girls, Sicily. With the Bronx, 1993, May 25th, 1993, one of the more pivotal moments in my young career as a Knicks fan, John Starks dunking over Michael Jordan, an amazing moment in New York Knicks history. But I just want to thank John Starks for his commitment to the community and you, Mr. Mayor, for your commitment to our young people. You know, I've often said that sports is the world's greatest social currency, and I borrowed that phrase from my friend from high school, Jason Klingscales, and it bears true today. When we give our young folks an opportunity, and that's what they need. In the movie Miracle, we saw that great moments do come from great opportunities. And this program is a great opportunity. The Knicks consistently invest in our community, and we're grateful for that. And the Junior Knicks Coach of the Year comes from my district, Muggsy Leggett. And this shows, again, a consistent commitment by the New York Knicks, by you, Mr. Mayor, and your role in the Edenwald YMCA. I would be remiss if I didn't thank you so much and thank you profusely for all of the work that you were able to do to assist our community in getting something that will last the test of time for those young folks in our community. But this program that you brought on, Mr. Mayor, and these developments with these amazing, young, and talented women and men, boys and girls, it's going to go a long way. And I'm really excited to be to see it. I want to see some of the games, some of the camaraderie. But most importantly, in 15, 20 years, I'm going to see the leaders that come out of this program. And that's what this is really about, Mr. May. And I'm grateful to you, and I'm grateful for John Stark's involvement, and I'm grateful I still have my New York Knicks cufflink. So, you know, I'm always going to represent for my team.
You, sir, are authentic, ready at all times. Now, I want to say to you, I think, you know, we have an opportunity now with this new youth basketball league to see your skills out there on the court. We already were treated, a lot of us who are in the Bronx for the homecoming concert, the hip-hop concert, saw your extraordinary freestyling skills. I want to see if that translates also to the basketball court. I imagine you have something to burnish your legend with.
Well, listen, I was part of the, if you can Google it, everybody, Basketball Nerds Bronx Science. Bronx Science, my senior year, we went to the city quarterfinals. We were 21-5. We did it. We did our thing, and it shows that that we were able to achieve athletically and academically, and that's something that this program is going to be able to do. Additionally, the highlight of the grand opening was when John Starks told me that I had a good form, and so I think that we'll be ready. I'll be ready to go around the city and show my good jump shot form citywide.
I like it. I like your spirit.
You're going to the Knicks too. I think you're going to be part of the reinforcements. I can feel it.
Thank you so much, Senator. All right. Now, everyone, a lot going on, as always. And this city keeps fighting back, and we keep proving that amazing things can happen in New York City. Tomorrow, we're putting out a report, and it sounds, as the senator just said, sounds kind of nerdy, but it really speaks to life in the city and the life of our people and what we're able to do to make people's lives better. It's called the Mayor's Management Report. Is something that's been issued for decades, all throughout the last 8 years of my administration, over 2,000 different indicators related to government, related to economy, you name it. This is the last one we'll be doing in my administration, so it looks over the last 8 years. And I just want to give a couple of points because I think it's so important. This report talks about education, highest graduation rate in the history of the city and climbing, 78.7% last year. We are going to keep pushing that up in the years to come because of all the investments we now have in place, all of the new approaches, pre-K, of course, massive increase in the number of kids in pre-K, and now 3K, which didn't even used to exist. That's been a game changer for our kids and families. The fight for safety, we've had a tough time the last year and a half, but overall New York City, over these 8 years, incredible progress, including something striking. Major felony crimes having decreased 13.4% over the last 8 years. That is really the big picture, and that's what we're going to keep working on and building. Almost 200,000 affordable homes preserved or built, over 500 miles of new bike lanes, you name it, including the Brooklyn Bridge just this week. Lots of great things in there, and challenges, issues we're still working on, problems that came up with COVID, things we still need to solve, undoubtedly. Like every report, you're going to find some things that we feel great about and other things that we have to do a lot more work on. But what it does prove is the ability of this city to move forward and do great things. And I'll tell you, some of the things I just mentioned there, pre-K, for example, the affordable housing plan, for example, bringing down crime the way it has been, not only in these last 8 years overall, but in the 25-plus years since CompStat began. All of these things they said couldn't be done. And I really want to remind people, as I'm preparing to leave office, I'll be speaking about some of the lessons learned. Don't believe the naysayers is one of the biggest lessons, because all of these massive changes were supposed to be, in the eyes of many observers, impossible, and yet they all happened. And that gives me such hope for this city. I also love to be out all around the neighborhoods of this city, seeing the number one greatest strength we have, which is our people. And so next week, it'll be my joy to be in Queens. We're taking City Hall to the borough of Queens. So City Hall and your borough all next week. A lot of exciting events, a lot of special moments ahead. We celebrate Queens. We're going to be making some major announcements about Queens. And I am looking forward to a very special week. Also, a hell of a lot of good food in Queens. I'm going to try and eat as much of it as possible. Okay, let's go to our indicators. So number one, again, this vaccination effort just growing constantly.
As of today, 11,135,051 doses administered to date, and you're going to see those mobile vans out at restaurants. It's going to be great today. Number two, daily number of people admitted to New York City hospitals for suspected COVID-19. Today's report, 104 patients, 36.61% confirmed positivity. Hospitalization rate, 1.15 per 100,000. And number three, new reported cases on a seven-day average. Today's report, 1,543 cases. I want to say a few words in Spanish on the very important topic. We started with the booster shot plan, and again, emphasizing we are ready. We're waiting for the federal government to tell us how and when, but we are ready. We want all New Yorkers to know that.
La vacuna contra el COVID-19 está salvando vidas en toda nuestra ciudad. Los refuerzos de la vacuna estarán llegando pronto. Nosotros estamos preparados para protegerlo a ustedes.
With that, let's turn to our colleagues in the media. Please let me know the name and outlet of each journalist.
Good morning. We will now begin our Q&A. As a reminder, we are joined by Dr. Dave Chokshi, Dr. Mitch Katz, and Small Business Services Commissioner Janelle Doris. Our first question today goes to James Ford from Pix11.
Well, I'm excited to be first. Thank you so much.
You know, James, since it's a sports day here, it takes a takes a spunky, energetic party starter to go first. So you're the one.
I do appreciate that. Let's dive in. About the booster shots, I mean, my question would be, why unveil the booster plan now when the White House and federal health authorities can't yet confirm the use and administration of boosters? I mean, I think I get that you want to show that you all are ready, but why now when the federal government doesn't fully have its act together?
Well, one of the things we've learned along the way, there's the famous phrase, God bless the child that's got their own. We have to be ready because originally, in fact, we heard it from the President of the United States, September 20th. And if suddenly that were to be the active date, we have to be ready because people will rightfully demand immediate action. But we don't know if it's that date or a different date, James. And look, of course, it's a little frustrating that it's gray right now. But we are ready. We want New Yorkers to know. A lot of people are asking us about it. So we want people to know there's a huge amount of vaccine sites. We have a lot of vaccine in reserve. It's on our minds. It's on the front of our minds. We're ready. The moment we get the date to start and the ground rules, we'll announce those and then start serving people immediately. Go ahead, James.
And a question for my colleague, Kala Rama. Could we get your response to several videos and pictures of overcrowded schools across the city, images that show no social distancing?
I haven't seen those images. I want to. So, James, if you and Kala will share them with my team, I'll make sure they show me. What we have seen overwhelmingly is a set of rules that everyone's very committed to. And of course, it's the very beginning of school, so people are working out in new conditions how to get things right. But I want to go by the year and a half evidence we have, the way our educators handled last school year, the way they handled summer rising, tremendous devotion to applying our approach effectively. The first few days of school, it takes time to sort things out unquestionably. But I'm quite convinced that everyone's committed to doing this the right way and doing it safely.
Our next question goes to Juliet from 1010 Winds.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Mayor and everybody on the call. I also have a question about boosters. Will this be in addition to walk-ins, will there be sign-ups for this? Where do people go for that? And what do you do if you start seeing, you know, long lines form for the walk-ins?
Great question, Juliet. I'm going to turn to Dr. Choksi and Dr. Katz to talk about how they're going to manage the process. Remember, we have the great benefit of having given over 11 million doses already and determined different approaches that work, and also managing things like lines when we've had them. I think there will be a lot of demand, but again, we've got 1,900 sites. Most people will be working from an appointment basis. That's what we've seen throughout. But what's most important is we have capacity. So I want you to hear from Dr. Choksi and Dr. Katz about how they're going to manage the process, and particularly your question about lines at walk-in sites.
Thank you, sir. And you covered all of the high points. A major one is that, you know, we have the healthcare infrastructure that we've built up over the last several months for COVID-19 vaccination. Those are not just the city sites, which have very significant throughput, but also pharmacies, hospitals, clinics, all of the places that we've been able to bring online during the period of our vaccination campaign to handle both appointments and walk-ins, as the mayor said. With respect to lines, you know, we do anticipate that there will be more demand in the initial days. And what we're going to do is message, as we have, the broad network where people can go to distribute that demand across that decentralized set of over 1,900 sites. And then at specific sites, you know, when there are lines, we'll use the same techniques that we did earlier in the campaign, offering people a slightly later appointment if they don't want to wait online, and of course, prioritizing people who are particularly elderly or have problems walking to get them to the front of the line to maximize their comfort. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Katz, you want to add?
I would just add that health and hospitals through our 11 hospitals and all of our outpatient clinics are prepared to provide the booster shots in both appointment slots and in walk-ins. We're well experienced on how to socially distance people when we have lines, and how to work down the lines, and how to find the people who may be elderly and cannot stand on lines. And I feel confident that we'll be able to do well in the boosters whenever they are approved. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Go ahead, Juliet.
Okay, thank you. Also, what more can you or Dr. Choksi or Dr. Katz tell us about the COVID cluster stemming from the Electric Zoo event?
I'll turn to Dr. Choksi to give you an update on the best we know about that. Go ahead, Doctor. And maybe Dr. Katz as well, because of Test and Trace, which obviously is doing follow-up. So who wants to start? I'll give it a free choice. Which of you wants to start?
I'm happy to start, sir. And thank you. Yes. So the health department is investigating this cluster of COVID-19 cases that was linked to the Electric Zoo. It's a music festival that occurred over Labor Day weekend. Thus far, we've identified 16 people as part of the cluster, and at least some of them appear to have been potentially contagious during the time that they were at the festival. And so that is what has led to our most important recommendation, which is if you are someone who was at the festival, even if only for one day or one event during the 3 days of the festival, we do encourage you to get tested. And that recommendation stands regardless of your vaccination status, but is particularly important if you've had symptoms recently. We encourage you to get tested. You can find a testing location at nyc.gov/COVID test in order to do that. The last thing that I'll say is that our investigation is multi-jurisdictional. That means that we're communicating with other state and local health departments to identify cases among residents of other jurisdictions. This helps us develop the full picture of what has happened related to this particular cluster of cases. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Katz, anything you want to add?
Just to add, the test and trace operation is working hard on these cases and interviewing the people who are from New York City and figuring out what their contacts are. This is one of our most effective ways of preventing further transmission of COVID. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Our next question goes to Chris from the New York Daily News.
Hi, Mayor. How are you doing today?
Good, Chris. How you been?
Good. I wanted to ask you about the Dangerous Vehicle Abatement Program and comments you made earlier in the week where you said you wanted to find out why the program hasn't been implemented on a timely basis. Then yesterday, your transportation commissioner said that the program's classes were never meant to start until this fall anyway. So what exactly is going on there?
Yeah, Chris, I've looked at it carefully. It is very much about the disruption caused by COVID. We originally were planning to move aggressively. When we looked at the whole budget situation and what could be done in person in the spring last year, 2020, it was one of the things that got put on hold because we did not believe we'd be able to do in-person classes and because we were holding off a number of areas of spending because we had a very, very dire situation. We didn't know where it was going. Once that got resolved, we put it back on track. There was certainly some issue with the private vendor we were dealing with. We're just doing this now. It will be up and running shortly. It has to be up and running. So it's a tortured tale because it's caught up in COVID and caught up in crisis, but it's something we are absolutely committed to moving right away. Go ahead, Chris.
Thank you. And on a different topic, with the situation going on Rikers Island, you've made no secret about the fact that you want the Less is More Act signed promptly. But on a purely practical level, even if that's signed by the governor today, it appears it won't actually take effect until March of next year at the earliest. So why do you believe it's such an integral part of addressing the crisis in the short term?
Very important question, Chris. Thank you for asking. In fact, I have spoken to the governor, very productive conversation last week. And the governor does have the ability to implement it immediately. That's my understanding from our team. And we need that. It would allow us in short order to get hundreds of people out of Rikers. Remember, a lot of folks, There's two parallel realities. There's a lot of folks who are in Rikers who really should be in a state prison system, not in the city jail. And second, there are folks who do not need to be incarcerated. And that's the point of less is more, if it is a type of technical violation that does not require incarceration. So when it comes to any situation we're talking about how we stop violence and protect public safety, obviously, I feel strongly about making the whole criminal justice system work, and those who need to be behind bars should be. But there are some people who clearly don't need to be behind bars, and this act would allow us to act on that the right way, and it can be done immediately.
Our next question goes to Steve Burns from WCBS 880.
Mr. Mayor, how are you today?
Good, Steve. How you doing?
Doing all right. First question, I wanted to go back to booster shots. The governor, current governor, seems to be operating this a little bit differently from the previous governor. I believe she said last week that the big vax sites like Javits Center, Aqueduct, would be available again. Those mass vax sites would be available if localities asked for them, essentially. So I wanted to see if you have any plans to ask the state for reinforcements, essentially, because it seems like the ball would be in your court to ask this, as opposed to last time when it was kind of dropped in your jurisdiction.
Steve, thank you. Really important question. I thank the governor because she was a local official, and she talks about it a lot, and she has respect for county executives and town supervisors and mayors and understands the role that we play and actually wants to communicate and figure out what will work, which is very, very helpful. In terms of our experience, and I would love to have Dr. Choksi, Dr. Katz weigh in, we found the decentralized sites to be far more effective than the mass sites, as it were, and we found them to do a much better job of reaching. We want to be able to handle the demand with the boosters. I think we have a lot of capacity that will be able to match it. Including, of course, all our colleagues in the voluntary hospitals, et cetera. But if we ever needed more help from the state, we wouldn't hesitate to ask for it. So we'll get direct response from the two people who have the best perspective
on whether they see a need for those mass sites in the short term on boosters, starting with Dr. Choksi.
Thank you so much, sir. I think you laid out the stepped approach that we have planned very well, which is we have a tremendous amount of capacity in the sites that are already running today. These are the pharmacies, the hospitals, the clinics that continue to administer first and that remains the most important thing we can do with respect to turning the corner on the pandemic is getting as many people who are unvaccinated to get their first dose as possible. But then, as you said, we have our city sites and we have the ability to expand capacity at those sites if needed, including the weekend events that the mayor described. And we've appreciated the culture of collaboration with the state, including the state health department, and certainly can step up the approach further if we're finding that that demand is greater than that very significant capacity that I've described. So we'll take all appropriate steps and monitor it, particularly in the initial day and days of the rollout. Thank you.
Dr. Katz?
Yes, I agree. I think local sites work best and that we have enough sites and we have enough vaccine and enough personnel. But as you and Dr. Choksi have said, we wouldn't hesitate if we needed additional help to ask the state to open up additional sites. I just don't think that will turn out to be necessary or make it more efficient. I think the local sites seem to bring out people best. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, Steve.
Much appreciate that. On a separate topic, I wanted to turn back to safe streets and I guess the question of your legacy on that topic. I know we've seen a lot more bike lanes. We've seen the Vision Zero efforts amp up, and I know that's been kind of your point of emphasis as we talked about this over the last week. But we also have seen traffic fatalities go back to their highest level since you took office. So as we see, I'm sure you've heard the kind of raw pain that a lot of these families that have lost loved ones have gone through, often visiting sites that were close to the deaths of their own loved ones where another crash has happened. So what would you say your legacy is and what can still be improved on city streets? I know Albany plays a role as well, but ultimately you can redesign streets, you can put in bike and bus lanes on your own. So what is your legacy on safe streets as we close out your time in office?
Well, I appreciate the question a lot, Steve, and it's really important. And before I talk about the legacy, I want to say there's a lot of pain out there, and I've met with a lot of the families who have lost loved ones, and so many of them have turned, you know, tremendous pain, like lifelong pain that they will be feeling, into incredible energy to move change and save other people's lives and save other families from the agony. And you particularly see groups I honor so much, like Families for Safe Streets, who I've worked with very closely. They're fighting now for the kinds of things that really are the next wave, like the Crash Victims Act in Albany. This is pivotal. We have got to get the bigger commitment from the state government and the federal government to the Vision Zero type approach. We've proven it works in the nation's largest city, but you cannot do it in isolation. We need all levels of government helping. So the Crash Victims Act passed one House legislature. It needs to pass the other House and be signed by the governor. That can happen this year still, because it's likely at some point the legislature comes back. And I think everyone who's feeling such passion rightfully right now about this issue, help us get this legislation passed. It would make a world of difference. But to the legacy quickly, Steve, I think what I'm proud of is we've changed the entire dialogue, the entire assumption about what can be done. When I announced Vision Zero in 2014, another example of so many naysayers that said, it would not work, it could not work, New Yorkers would reject it. And in fact, it's now something that is very, very intensely supported by New Yorkers. New Yorkers believe in Vision Zero and all the things we have to do to protect people. There's a huge amount of enforcement happening that didn't used to. Things like speed cameras and school speed cameras used to be controversial. They're now much more broadly supported. All the traffic redesigns, greater enforcement by the NYPD, all of these things are having an impact. But what we found, and again, if people want to have an honest conversation, then we have to understand a global pandemic disrupted a huge amount of progress. If you want to understand these big initiatives over 8 years, then look at 2014 through 2019 and see what you see. 2020, 2021 are massively affected by pandemic. And it's such a holistic, such a total impact on our society, you can't act like that didn't happen. What has happened as a result, way too many people are in their cars, and some of them are acting very recklessly. And we saw this week, Steve, MTA reporting they're now gone past the 50% mark in terms of subway ridership returning to pre-pandemic levels. That's a really hopeful sign. We have to do more and more and more, get people back to subways, buses, ferries, you name it, bikes, out of cars. That is the number one thing we need to do to restore the progress of Vision Zero. But what I'm proud of is it is the right model. It has changed the entire discussion, the mindset. It's changed the behavior of drivers, and we need to do a lot more to build upon it.
Our next question will go to Emma Fitzsimmons from the New York Times.
Good morning, Mayor. I have a question from one of my colleagues. So in three of these recent child deaths, Delicia Batties, Legacy Beauford, and J.C. Eubanks, the families were reported for severe physical or sexual abuse that was investigated by both ACS and NYPD. In two cases, the investigations ended with no finding of abuse, even though neither child was examined by a pediatrician or forensically interviewed. Can you explain why those steps were not taken, and do you think they should have been?
Well, Emma, first of all, I've worked on these issues of child protection for decades, and every single one of these tragedies needs a full investigation. And any time we find either that someone made a mistake in one of the city agencies, in which case that person needs to be held accountable, or we find something structural that needs to change, we've got to make that reform. We do see in too many cases, and this goes back now, in my experience, decades to some of the most painful and most prominent cases that really grip the entire city. What a lot of times we see is a new person enters the equation. Too often, unfortunately, a boyfriend who comes along later and is the assailant. A lot of times that's something that doesn't get tracked. It's just not part of the equation when the investigation happens. It happens later, and it's horrible, and it's tragic. But that said, even though we've seen that kind of thing, every one of these needs a full investigation, and we have to act on what we find. I'm waiting to hear on these recent cases what the consequences have to be, either in terms of some structural change or of any employees have to be held accountable, but I don't have those full investigations done yet. Go ahead, Emma.
And then looking to the management report, you mentioned some of the highlights. But, you know, what statistic were you perhaps most excited about, and what statistic did you find the most disappointing?
Thank you for the question. The disappointing was what you would expect. And so in some ways, you know, when you know something's because of COVID, it's just as horrible, it's just as painful, but it's not a surprise. So you'll see in there the areas where I know COVID has been underlying the problem. We just talked about the traffic fatalities, for example, some of what we've seen with crime, some of what we see in terms of Department of Corrections. All of that is because COVID set a whole series of things in motion. There are other problems always. I'm not trying to say COVID is the only problem. I'm saying the numbers you'll see in the report that are not satisfying at all have, in many cases, a basis in the disruption of COVID. It doesn't mean anything, but we have to keep working with every tool we've got to fix it. What's moving, what's inspiring is that the big goals, the sort of the push goals, the notion that we could call upon government to do things they had never done before, worked so consistently. I have come to the conclusion, Emma, that the limitations that the bureaucracies put on themselves are extraordinarily artificial. The presumed legal limitations, the presumed personnel limitations, whatever it is, so much of the time is a falsehood and a sort of an artifice that gets created in an internal dialogue where people allow themselves to think they can't do something when in fact they can. When pushed to do great things, this government is capable of great things, this city is capable of great things. So when you look at the numbers of crime over the 8 years, the way crime's been pushed down, in addition to what was done since ComStat, it's breathtaking. Pre-K, stunningly fast how that was achieved, and 3K now behind it. These are very, very inspiring things. And so I hope people stop for a moment to recognize whatever the challenges are going forward, starting with climate change, we've proven we can do big and very bold things here in this city.
Our next question goes to Michelle from the Associated Press.
Michelle? Michelle, can you hear us?
Can you hear me?
Wait, there she is. You're faint, Michelle. Try turning up your volume.
All right.
Or there we go.
How's that, better?
Much better.
Okay, great. Thanks, Mayor. I wanted to ask about the vaccination requirement as it applies to the UN General Assembly meeting next week. The Russian ambassador has criticized the city's notice to the UN. He said this is a discriminatory infringement on the nation's rights at the UN. He also said that it did not take into account people who cannot be vaccinated for medical reasons or who might have received a vaccine that did not have World Health Organization approval, such as Russia's Sputnik V vaccine. I'm wondering if you could respond to him.
My simple statement to begin is, if the Russian ambassador is against it, I'm for it. This is, I have no words for Vladimir Putin and everything else that's come out of Russia, but they have invalidated themselves in so many ways, including trying to disrupt our elections. So if their vaccine isn't good enough, then they should go and use one of the other vaccines. And that's what we're making available. I spoke to Secretary General Guterres 2 weeks ago, and we had a very good conversation. He's been outstanding in trying to push the highest health standards for the General Assembly. We will have vaccination sites available. Anyone who is not yet vaccinated can get vaccinated. Anyone who's had a non-approved vaccine can get one of the ones that we're using here that are effective. And I think, to the credit of the leadership of the United Nations, they've put stringent rules in place for the General Assembly, and that's really important for this city, but for the whole world as well. Go ahead, Michelle.
I just wanted to follow up on that a little bit. You mentioned the conversation you had a couple weeks ago. Can you talk about the decision-making that went into this process? Did this originate with the city? Did the State Department or the UN ambassador discuss this with the city? Where did this originate from?
I had built a relationship with the Secretary General when he first came into that office, and think very, very highly of him. So I reached out to him proactively to say, hey, here are our standards in the city. And we understand the United Nations is a particular organization, has its own rules and its own jurisdiction. But I expressed to him how important it was to have continuity with what we're doing in the city, just for the health and welfare of everyone. And to his credit, he was very receptive. And I know it's tremendously complex, hundreds of nations, and everyone has different approaches. I do feel for everyone in the UN leadership that they've got a really complex task. But I appealed directly on behalf of New York City and to help us protect the progress we've made. I don't know what else was happening with the federal government, for example, but I do want to give the Secretary General credit. I think he very much was trying to find every way to work cooperatively with his member states to maximize vaccination and to create the most protected environment for the General Assembly.
We have time for two more questions today. The next question goes to Katie Honan from the city.
Hey, good morning, Mayor de Blasio. How are you?
Good, Katie. How you been?
Good. I have a question. I know when you were announcing the vaccine mandate, you said that the city would have people go door-to-door to every single business to do outreach. Did you have the stats on that? Did you reach every single business, and how many businesses there are, and do you have that information?
I don't have the stats. I'll turn to our Small Business Services Commissioner, Janelle Doris, to go over what he knows. I know there was a very, very extensive outreach effort over the course of a month, including, obviously, anyone who asked for a visit or wanted to go through things over the phone, online, whatever it was. But in terms of the reach and what we found, and I'll turn to the commissioner. I also want to say before we do, Katie, of all the great journalists in the city, I expect to see you out there during Queens Week, okay? I'm just putting down that marker. And now, Commissioner Doris.
Yeah, thank you, Katie. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for that question. So, as you know, we had over 600 canvassers canvass in the city, got to about 37,000 businesses. The Department of Small Business Services already has webinars every Wednesday. We already helped about 750 businesses who attended, and over about 2,600 calls to our hotline. And so, again, it's basically walking through the process with these businesses, making sure that they understand what the requirements are, but also, you know, bringing them aware of our services as well, you know, making sure that they know if they need any additional assistance, we can provide it for them.
Excellent. Go ahead, Katie.
Thank you. And yeah, speaking of Queens, as you might be aware, the bridge to Rikers Island actually is in East Elmhurst. My colleague, Ravain Blau, wrote about some of the issues with getting inmates to their court dates at Queens Criminal Court. So while you'll be in Queens next week, seems like a good time to cross the bridge and visit Rikers since you'll be in Queens anyway. Do you plan on it?
As I said, Katie, I've been asked this several times. Right now, I'm having a number of meetings and conversations to address the underlying issues, including with the state, including with DAs, different departments of the city. Got a lot of work to do to make sure we get each and every one of these issues addressed so we can improve the situation. That's where I'm putting my energy right now. I will be visiting, but I'll be visiting when I've gotten the work done to address these new challenges and make sure that we are moving forward. This is a particular set of challenges we have not seen previously, but I am convinced the plan we have is going to address them. That's my focus.
Our last question for today goes to Christina from Chalkbeat.
Hi, Mayor. Thanks for taking my question. I want to ask about school transportation. We're hearing, quite frankly, horror stories from parents. They say that buses are not showing up, that their children, often children with special needs, are spending hours and hours on buses, and some are being taken to the wrong schools. Additionally, we've heard that students are still missing Metro cards. So while other cities and states are considering calling the National Guard to try to get school buses running efficiently, I'm wondering what you're doing to address the school bus issue, and additionally, what's holding up the Metro cards?
Christina, I'm going to tell you, first of all, I very, very much appreciate any time a journalist helps us identify a problem that we're not seeing the specifics of. If you have specific cases, we need to know about them. We'll absolutely be respectful of the families involved, but we need to know each and every one of these reports. I've spoken to the first deputy mayor a number of times this week, of course, the chancellor, elected officials. I'm not hearing a bigger trend here. I care about each and every one of these situations. I want to address them, but I'm not hearing what you just reported, and I want to know if there's something bigger going on or isolated instances that we need to fix specifically. So I'll follow up right now on all of that. MetroCard distribution, again, not hearing a specific problem. Let me find out what's going on. We'll get you an update in the course of the day. But any specifics you can give us or all of your colleagues listening, we welcome reports on where there are problems. The first week or two of school, there's always adjustments to be made. But if there's something we can fix, we're going to fix it right away. Go ahead, Christina.
Additionally, I wanted to ask about youth vaccination rates. You provide breakdowns by zip code for adults, but the most granular breakdown I've seen for youth is by borough. I've asked DOH and DOE for more granular youth vaccination data. I'm wondering if you can provide that or if you have any plans to.
I'll turn to Dr. Choksi. I want to do the overview right now that today's report, 356,257 kids in the 12 to 17-year-old range have gotten at least one dose. That is 68.5%. That's a really great number, and that's going to keep growing, I think, a lot in the next few weeks. In terms of breaking it out, the more we can break out, the better. Sometimes there's limits on how much we can produce consistently and accurately, but I'll turn to Dr. Choksi. What can we do to provide Christina with a better picture of it, what's going on with youth vaccination?
Thanks, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, Christina, for the question. We'll certainly be happy to follow up on the inquiry. Depending on the numbers, particularly at the zip code level, there may not be sufficient numbers with respect to being able to calculate vaccination rates, which, of course, is the most important part of the data for us to be able to share. But as the mayor said, we have been making good progress, and those numbers have grown to over 356,000 young New Yorkers now. So there may be ways for us to share that going forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dave, and everyone. As we conclude today, let's look at our young people. They are leading the way. Remember, this is the category of New Yorkers who has most recently been able to get vaccinated months and months later than most adults, and yet stunning level of vaccination among youngest New Yorkers. A lot of times it is the young people helping their parents and grandparents to understand how important it is to get vaccinated. So I want to give a shout out and a thanks to the young people in New York City. And I want to say to all parents, as a parent myself, please, got a lot of opportunity to get your kids vaccinated. Today, tomorrow, every single one of the public schools that your kids go to, if they're not yet vaccinated, they can get vaccinated right there in the school for free. Let's get this done so we can keep moving forward as a city. Thank you, everyone.